I would point out a few things. I would guess that everyone in this room has experienced the trauma of the world and world events, like 9/11 and the shootings of religious communities. Do they not strike at your heart and your home? You've experienced trauma. You have ingested the story, and it has left a mark inside you. Another thing I find extraordinary is that even if you never experienced trauma, let's say you were literally born yesterday, right? That's beautiful. An innocent child born carries the trauma and the story of their parents. It's a lot to wrap your mind around. But we're coming to understand that every experience of trauma is stored in the body in some way, and it, as try as we might to counteract it, it takes multiple generations to recode our body's DNA, to recode its chemistry and the way it's going to be in the world. So say you are a descendant of enslaved people here in the U.S. Somewhere in your body, not just your mind, you carry the story of your ancestors. You carry their pain. You carry their resilience. For me, I'm a child of parents who were born at the end of the Great Depression. They were born into a mindset of scarcity. My mother told stories of how she wanted to drink milk as a child, and it was rationed. So I grew up in a household that always had 2 gallons of milk at hand. You may think that that's reasonable. It's a reasonable response. And of course, it's easy to see. But the deeper trauma would be a lifelong struggle with cravings. Cravings that led to weight gain and weight loss. Cravings that led to dessert with every meal because there was a deep fear that one day there might not be enough or any at all. Then there are the stories that are deeper yet, stories lost to generations where supposition has to be good enough because tangible proof no longer exists. I've shared with a few of you how I have a deep yearning to study Judaism and Jewish culture. I've always loved Jewish music. It resonates in my body, in my bones, and it feels like a deep, known ritual that I should move to. But it kind of feels like maybe I grew up in the wrong family. Over the years, I asked my mom questions about family history. So how long ago did we actually come from Germany? How did we travel? What religion did we claim when we got here? And there are so many other questions. Trying to find a story, a crack that I can reach into and extract why I feel the things I do in my bones. It's like an archaeological dig site, uncovering the past and listening to those voices. It's exciting and it's scary. What if I find out that my family was on the wrong side? What does that even mean? Because whose story am I to tell? That's the big question, right? For all of us. Whose story is authentically mine to tell, and how do I tell it? Last Sunday after church, some of you joined Matthew and I for a session where we started to unpack the complexities around the current UU World publication and why it was terribly hurtful to transgender people. But one of the big takeaways I want to be clear about is that the writer had a story to tell. There is a story that is authentically hers. However, it was unfortunate that she crafted that story around the injury that was caused. And in telling it again, she re-injured a larger community. She could have told, though, how she learned something new and how that has affected her life. It would have been meaningful for her to have talked about her relationship with a transgender person and how that made her learn more about her own identity. And what she has learned was power dynamics and white supremacy culture and who she is. As ministers, we are constantly attempting to craft the authentic story. We look for lessons that come from our wounds, from the place where we hurt and had to learn. I believe we all have those stories. We all have stories we could share with one another that shed light on an experience from a different perspective. Because even if I shared a very common event, your experience of that event could be totally different from mine. Because we bring different lenses, different life experiences. We carry generations of trauma in our bones. But there is something to be learned in those different perspectives. As we live our lives in their fullness and we become more aware of others, we become more aware of ourselves. We hopefully become aware of how even the smallest interaction can cause the arc of the universe to bend that much more. How many of you know what happened in 1995 to the ravaged landscape of Yellowstone National Park? It was 1995 that the gray wolves were reintroduced to Yellowstone. Before then, the government predator control program had eliminated the gray wolf from America's lower 48 states in their sights and had succeeded. Consequently, though, the deer and the elk population increased substantially. The vegetation important to the soil and the riverbank structure was cleaned out at Yellowstone as a result of overgrazing. It left the landscape vulnerable to erosion. The entire ecosystem of the park was suffering. Without the wolves as a top predator, the delicate balance of predator and prey was compromised. Their removal in the early 20th century disrupted food webs, allowing the elk to multiply, all while consuming increasing amounts of foliage. Now that phenomenon occurred again in reverse when the wolves were introduced. The wolves were brought back to the park. They not only killed the elk, but they also changed their prey's behavior. The herbivores started to avoid areas like valleys and gorges where they could be easily hunted by predators. As a result, those areas began to rejuvenate. Other species such as birds and beavers and mice and bears that had left the area returned. The plant life once again thrived along the riverbanks, and the erosion significantly decreased. It was the stabilization of the riverbanks that actually made the rivers and streams change course. But it was the reintroduction of just a small population of wolves that the landscape changed to meet. The whole landscape transformed. That's the wolf story. If the earth is our body, what then did we learn? The wolves were only doing what wolves do. Why did we kill them? Why did we silence them? What made us believe that ours was the only story to be told? That has been held in long belief that the victor writes history, and in doing so, they silence those conquered and oppressed. We are living in a time when it is becoming increasingly clear that we each have a story to tell, and we have listened far too long to one story. We have other stories to listen to now. We have stories that have been carried in our bones for years, for generations. It's time to give those stories voice, to tell the truth. It's time for each of us to listen to those stories, to hear the words, to recognize the damage, to pay our respects, and to renew a shared vision. It's time for us to lean into life, to say yes to all the pain and all the sorrow, and to say yes to all the joy and beauty and resilience there is in the rising of those lost stories. It's time to write the story of your life, the one you want told long after you're gone. So I ask you, who lives? Who dies? Who tells your story? Please rise in body or spirit as we sing together our closing hymn. Number 6, Just As Long As I Have Life to Breath. In a moment, I will extinguish our chalice and then read our benediction, and we'll sing our closing. As a congregation that welcomes many ways of being in the world, I invite you to do one of three things. If you'd rather not be touched by others, please place your hands on your shoulders. If you're getting over a cold or an illness, but others may touch you, clasp your hands in front of you. And if you're willing and able, please reach to those around you. I will now extinguish our chalice. But not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we will carry in our hearts until we are together again. How do we end our story? The skilled writer would say we should write the ending first. We'll get to the end faster if we know where we're going. But that's not the only way. Whether you're writing a cliffhanger or a comedy, leave one last breath undone. Let your audience wonder what comes next. It is in that wondering that the stories of heroes are told and legends are made. In that one last breath, where we each create our own truth and the story begins anew. May it ever be so. Let us join in singing. Thank you.